to operate as a subcommittee until then. I want to thank members for taking the time, and members of various aspects of the Asian community for taking the time to be here this evening. Appreciate that very much. Just so you know, members will be coming in and out for other committee meetings, so don't be offended or think it's out of tone for members to come in and out as they attend other meetings. That's quite regular, so we're just here to happy to hear from you and hear your testimony. And we will be hearing tonight from several different representatives of Minnesota's Asian community. I think we'll learn tonight that the Asian community, from our witnesses, is a very broad and diverse group of people that live here in Minnesota that encompass many different backgrounds, nationalities from many different countries. We'll get an overview first from Eileen Herr of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and hopefully she can share her expertise with us about these distinctions and provide us with some demographic information I think will be helpful. Then we'll hear from some various other representatives of two of the largest Asian communities in Minnesota, those of Vietnamese origin, and as well as the Hmong. And then the committee will meet again tomorrow. We'll hear from members of the African American community as well. So, and I will call the committee to order now. We officially have a quorum. Clerk will note the roll, and Representative Tingelstadt moves approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The 12th meeting. Any discussion? Not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Ms. Herr, welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your presentation.
All right. Mr. Chairman, my name is Eileen Herr, and I am the Executive Director for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and it's my pleasure to be here this evening. Briefly, the Council was established in 1985 by the Minnesota State Legislature to work with them on issues pertaining to the Asian Pacific community. And in 1985, what Minnesota witnessed was, of course, a dramatic growth in the Asian Pacific community, and community members started bringing their issues and concerns to the legislature, and members of the legislature said, wow, we don't have the, as we are right now, we may not have the expertise or the skills in order to help you out the best that we can, and thereby, of course, creating and establishing the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Since that time, what we have noticed since 1985 to 1990 and now in the 2000 census is that the Asian Pacific community has grown even more than what people had anticipated, primarily a lot of different reasons. One, direct migration from other countries to the state of Minnesota, for either political asylum as refugees or immigrants through employment-based visas and programs. And then the second one is that, of course, birth, coming here. And then the third one is secondary migration. And within the last 5 years, we've seen, the state of Minnesota has seen a significant growth in secondary migrations of other Asian groups from other areas coming into Minnesota. I don't think a lot of people spend a lot of time thinking about the secondary migration that also moves out of Minnesota. And so what my work with the Asian Pacific community has been that it's a fluctuating community. It grows, and then people come and people leave. But a lot of times, if you don't work within this community, you don't see that very much. But overall, the community has tend to grow. What are some of the reasons why people are choosing Minnesota? I could give you the top three reasons. One is economic. The low unemployment rate here, just the robust economy has drawn many people here looking for job, particularly let's say the low-skilled jobs that are attracting a lot of people. And then the second one is education. Is attracting families with young children to bring their children here. And then the third one, not so much as relates to St. Paul, Minneapolis, but to rural Minnesota, is the crime, the low rate of crime in rural Minnesota. So communities are growing out there, and families are bringing their families in from other states to live in those communities. And so in the packet that I've sent out for you, the first page is from our binding report, which was submitted to members of the legislature earlier this year. We have here, just from 1990 data, of the numbers of the top, I think it was, it might be 12 or 15 counties that have a high Asian Pacific population. And you can see in 1999, and then compare that to the 1990 numbers, just the numeric change and the percentage of change has grown dramatically. If you look at, say, Dakota and Anoka County, where the percentage growth has been more than 100%, and then likewise in other counties, the numbers are growing, and these are. This is the map where the growth is occurring. The third page is just the top 10 school district with high concentration of Asian Pacific American students, and you know, I should also note that approximately 80% of the community resides in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And then the rest is distributed to other counties in Minnesota, particularly Olmsted, Winona, Blue Earth, Nobles County, St. Louis, and up in, I believe, Moorhead area. And then also in the St. Cloud Stearns County, too. That's where we see some pockets of Asian Pacific Americans. And then if you just keep on flipping, we do see numbers from the census this year. While the numbers aren't broken down yet by ethnic groups, we do see the Asian total estimates right now just by sole identification of community saying I'm from the Asian community instead of saying I'm Asian and white or I'm Asian and black, I'm Asian and something. That just raw number is 141,900 something. So approximately 142 just Asian Americans. Now Asian Pacific Islanders nationally is broken into two groups because the interest of the Asian Pacific American community is very different from the interest of the Asian Pacific Islander community. And what we mean by that is the Pacific Islanders are people who are native to the Americas, say Native Hawaiians, Guamans, Samoans, where America has territories, and they are there, and so they are native, and they're not, they didn't migrate, say, like the Chinese, the Japanese, the Hmong migrated to this country. And so there's different issues. For example, the Asian Pacific, the Asian American community doesn't have the issue of, say, sovereignty or land versus the Native Hawaiians have those types of issues. And so for purpose of the census, they've done a broken down by Asian and then Native Hawaiians or other Pacific Islanders. And in Minnesota, we have approximately 2,000 Native Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders. But for purposes of the state, our state agency is that we do group them all together because the numbers are so small, and we try to work with, say, the Hawaiian community, Samoan community, and Guamian community that are here in Minnesota. And so when you start looking at that, the numbers, again, I said, is growing and is very significant. I think they're not numbered, but maybe the fourth page down. Fifth page, actually, is the Census 2000 redistricting data, broken down by numbers of Asian Pacific Islanders, Asian Pacific people, and in those counties. And you can see Hennepin County has the most, followed by Ramsey, Dakota, Olmsted, Anoka, Washington, Stearns, Scott's. So it's really what we're starting to see is that pockets of Asian Pacific communities throughout the state of Minnesota. And what we would the message that I think my council would like to give to this committee, of course, is just that Asian Pacific Islanders are in all 8 congressional districts. When I was just looking at the first page in terms of where people were, in terms of the county, and then looking at the congressional districts, there are significant sizes. However, at the same time, the Asian Pacific community in the state of Minnesota only makes up 2.9% of the total population. So while we can say that the numbers are growing, it's still relatively small in comparison to statewide numbers and statewide data. But one thing to keep in mind as you all are thinking about redistricting is that particularly in Ramsey County and in Hennepin County, we believe that there to be significant undercount of refugee communities within these two areas. And that is that I myself have heard from communities that did not fill out the census forms. And while we tried our best to work with the community to get the count higher, a lot of people, because the census form did not come in a lot of languages that we have here in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is very different from the rest of the United States in that we have over 55% Southeast Asian here in our state. In the rest of the national numbers, Southeast Asians only make up less than 25% of the total population. And so here in the state of Minnesota, the highest ethnic group that we have is the Hmong. And before the census, we were estimating maybe 50 to 60,000, but the census data, I believe, will come at much lower number than that. And what we believe happened was that, of course, a lot of language barriers and then also mistrust of, say, of government forms, not filling them out, and then also not being able to read and not turning it in on time. And then when people came to visit them, you know, being scared and not opening the doors and answering questions. So we do believe that there is maybe a significant undercount in Ramsey County and Hennepin County, as far as the Southeast Asian community is concerned. Now, in Minnesota, there are what I like to call three different communities from the Asian communities. The first one is the more established communities, as the Chinese, the Japanese, Korean, Filipino, that have been in Minnesota for many generations. The Chinese community was established here in Minnesota in 1870. And so there are some communities that have been here for a while and very established and know the community. And then there's a second group, which is called immigrants. And this group came in the 60s, 70s, and 80s as U.S. immigration law relaxed and came over as professionals. And this group entails, you know, the Malaysian, Singaporeans, Asian Indian that are very professional, that work primarily in say high tech industry, a medical field. And so this community is very educated and fairly well off. And know the language very well, because in terms of English academic language they have. And then the third group is the refugee group. And we know that this group comprises the majority of the Asian Pacific community here. And the refugee group entails Southeast Asians and Tibetans. And with this group, there's issues of language, acculturation, adaptation, not knowing the system as well, not knowing the language as well. And so the work that we do with them is a little bit more intensive than, say, with the other two groups. And so with that, I'll just end it there. I could go on and on. There's a lot of things, but I do want to address the concerns that you have, if any, and then we'll just take it from there. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Hur. I think some members may have some questions. I'm just curious, you identified some of the counties and the settlement patterns of where the Asian community have settled. What about within the metropolitan area itself? I mean, you mentioned the Chinese came here in the 1870s. I mean, there's certain areas within the metropolitan area where they've that are pockets, or is it dispersed throughout the metropolitan area? There's certain areas.
It's really dispersed. I mean, a lot of people tend to think that Ramsey County has the most Asian Pacific numbers, but Ramsey County has, say, maybe the highest Hmong population, but it is really Hennepin County that has the most Asian Pacific American communities residing there. And little communities do tend to stay together, but then they stay in pockets. And so I could tell you, there's not any data that supports this, but from what I know of working with the community and where they live, say the Filipino community tend to live, a lot of them live in St. Louis Park. And I work, you know, Representative Rode is on, sits on our board, and he knows that his constituents, a lot of them are Filipino Americans, and then they live in Woodbury. But the Chinese community tend to live in the suburbs, in Edina, Eden Prairie, Golden Valley, Maple Grove, and the Southeast Asian community, which is not surprisingly that they would choose the inner cities, because the affordable housing and the rental properties are much more available, say, in the inner cities. And so the Hmong community primarily in St. Paul, some in Minneapolis, the Lao community primarily in Minneapolis, and the first tier suburbs of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Richfield, same with the Vietnamese community. So I say within the core cities would be more Southeast Asian, and then the first tier suburbs would be more of, say, the Filipinos, Chinese, Japanese community. And they are fairly, they tend to stay within the Twin Cities area because, again, due to immigration practices and employment opportunities, they are in the Twin Cities area, especially in the, say, high-end jobs. With technology, engineering, computer. And then we see a very strong and healthy Asian Indian community in Rochester around the Mayo Clinic.
Representative Riffenberg has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Herr, you were talking about where some of the different Asian nationalities live and such. What can you tell us about the their business communities? Do they each have their separate business communities? And if so, where are they located? And are they involved in different chamber activities, or do they have their own business groups? Or what can you tell us about the Asians as far as the business community?
Ms. Herr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riffenberg. The Asian communities do have pockets of say, business developments, but they tend to do it together. Like if you look at Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis, while the communities do live in the suburban areas, they tend to come back into the inner cities to do the shopping and to build businesses. And so, say, in the city of Minneapolis, along Nicollet Avenue, you see Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, Lao stores, and it's very diverse. Same with University Avenue in St. Paul. You have Vietnamese, Lao, Hmong businesses all together. And so there's not, say, individual pockets of what is happening in, say, LA, where they have Little Tokyo, which is all Japanese, and then they have Chinatown, which is all China. And now they have Little Bangkok, where it's really Thai, where the community comes and settles and then builds the businesses. In Minnesota, it's a little bit more diverse because the community is much, much smaller. And in regards to are they part of chambers of commerce, I do know that there is an Asian Business Chamber of Commerce that works pan-Asian, but there are also a Hmong Business Chamber of Commerce and then a Vietnamese Business Chamber of Commerce, and then some businesses getting involved with, say, the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Riffenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then, based on from what you've said about the different nationality communities coming together as one business district, would it be a fair assessment to say that the Asian community views itself as one community?
Ms. Sir?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riffenberg. That's something that we are working towards. There's a sort of a national movement to create a pan-Asian unity, but that is, even the term Asian American has its, doesn't have its origin, say, in tradition, culture, or a heritage. It's much more of a political term, a political context, because the community here realizes that individually each community is very small. Say you have the Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, Korean community, each at 15,000. That's very small. How do we come together in order for us to work on something, to accomplish some common goals that that we're all interested in, say, better education for our children, better economic opportunities, more loans from the small, from the SBA. So coming together to work together, and there's a pocket of groups, and there are leaders that are now starting to work together in sort of a pan-Asian movement. And that is something that I love to see, because I'm working at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Each community is also very strong and diverse individually. So, say the Korean community, they have churches, businesses, that they're very strong because, and they have language schools and cultural schools where communities can come together and learn the language and learn the dance and be with each other. And so they, on that level, that in terms of community development, it's happening at each individual community level. And then on top of that, there's another layer of bringing these leaders together to come and talk and meet with one another. So in terms of do the Asian community, each and every ethnic groups, do they consider themselves part of Asian American or Asian America? I would be hesitant to say yes. I would also be hesitant to say no, and that is that we do share a lot of things in common, say, leaving our country and coming here, having certain features, you know, facial features that are that we share in common, but also the terminology Asian Pacific is so very vast. In our statute, we count Asia Pacific as anywhere from east of Afghanistan, so South Asians, Pakistanians, Tibetans, you know, are included in Asia Pacific. And so that terminology is very, very broad. We are working, the council is, on creating and bringing the community together for common purposes, but at the same time, each individual community is also trying to develop themselves, and that is also very good to see.
Sure, you mentioned the political context. I mean, do you think that the Asian community, or if the populations were sufficient for, say, the Hmong area in St. Paul or other areas, I mean, would those, in your opinion, I mean, should there be legislative districts drawn that would recognize those populations for the political context, for political clout for those
Yes, Mr. Chair, that would be wonderful, and that is something that I've heard the community talking about, in that if, in fact, St. Paul has, you know, 30, almost 40, you know, thousand estimated Asian Pacific Islanders in that area, and we speculate that the majority of them are Hmong, that would be very good. But again, being involved in the political process and knowing about it are two different things. And where this community is concerned is that they're very young here in the United States of America. They have a lot of a learning curve. They are becoming much, much involved and engaged in politics, and we've seen that within the last couple of years, especially last year when we had two members from the Hmong community in St. Paul running for the Minnesota House, and so that was very wonderful to see, and it's only going to continue, and I think more and more people are only going to become involved in politics, and that's really wonderful to see, and if that could happen, you know, the community would love and welcome that.
Representative Tingelstad had a question.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your testimony, Ms. Herr. I have a couple of questions a little bit off the subject. I work a lot with adoption legislation here at the Capitol, and I know that at one point at least, Minnesota had the highest population of Korean adopted children, and I know more recently there's been a lot of adoptions from China and Vietnam, and just a couple of questions related to that. So when those families fill out the census data, what would they put down for their children? How do they rate on the census?
Ms. Herr?
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, it's very individually based. I do know that some people have come up to me and say, you know, for my adopted child, I've put Korean, you know, but some parents have put down as just regular, when they do the form, you know, you fill out your children. So they fill out as a white household, and then they put the name of their children, and then they're all counted. And so some parents have become much more conscious, I believe, of their child as an adopted child from another country, and have started to fill that out. I wouldn't say the majority, but some have just tended to fill it out as a member of their child, as a member of their family. And so we don't know yet, but we do speculate that in Minnesota we have approximately 15,000 adopted Koreans that reside in Minnesota. And in the 1990 census, the Korean community within Minnesota was 10,000. And so the community members, and when the adopted Korean children do become older, they do become more active and more involved with, the Korean community. And so the Korean community, of course, embraces the adopted Koreans and say, you know, they're part of our community. And if we were to just look at, and not to look at, say, the political implications behind whether or not this person is Korean or not, but just looking at embracing them as people who share common ancestry, then they say, we welcome them, and the Korean community in Minnesota is 25,000. You know, they've said that with a lot of pride, and I don't want to take that away from them in any way, but I also caution them that, you know, parents have the right to mark the census form if their child is Korean, or if they considered their child white. And so there, I don't believe there's any guidelines from the census that says if your child is adopted from another country, count them as such from another country. Even for us with the council, when we serve people, we don't say, are you Asian, and prove it. It's really based on identity. If they claim that they are Asian, then, you know, we try to serve them as much as that we can. And so it isn't the 1/8 Indian test that the federal government has, say, for the Native American community. But that might be an issue. And that's something that we are looking at the census, because we know that people who filled out solely as Asian American is approximately 142,000. And then there are still approximately 70,000 that says they are Asian and something else. Asian and white, Asian and black. And do we consider them, and do we count them as Asian Americans too? If we do, then that number raises significantly. So, you know, I am very, very curious as to what that's going to look like with multi-ethnic, multi-racial classification and identification.
Thank you. Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, real quickly, Representative Tingelstad, we have three or four other testifiers.
Just a real quick comment. Ms. Herr, I really appreciate your testimony. You mentioned, too, some of the cultural opportunities, and I know that there's, you know, a lot of families with adopted children that, you know, go to some of the different cultural events, the dances, the language camps, and all those various things. So it really brings a lot of rich vibrance to our community, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you for your testimony.
My pleasure.
So, I think Tuan Pham, if you'd like to come forward. And Representative Riffenberg, I know I'd mentioned a comment about the business community. I know you're on Nicollet, I believe, so perhaps you can share some of your expertise on the Vietnamese community and proceed with your presentation. Welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the tape, that would be appreciated.
Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I would like to thank all of you. Let me have a chance to be here to share some of our culture. My name is Thuan Joseph Pham. I born in North Vietnam and come South Vietnam 1954. Then my family come here in August 80 with 10 children. And thank God and thank Minnesota have a good education system. So all our children have graduated from university, get master degree and engineer. Youngest one just graduates. Good job. Myself, we first resettlement in Rochester, and we lived there about 8 years, and we spent most of the time re-education myself. And after graduate, I get physical plant director and work there some year. And when our children grow up and move up to UFM here, then we will follow our children here. Then I work for correction department and retired there as a chief engineer 4 years ago. But retired, but I still working. I own my capital market. And recently we just organized capital development company and I am a president. And back in Vietnam, I graduated from National Administration School, then worked in many different areas, political, technical, business, business, and so on. So after I share with you, you can give me 100 questions. I'm very happy to share with you. Then come here. I move up Twin City and live in 478 University. That's the building we bought it and we opened market 89. And about our history, that's a long story. I don't think we have to share whole thing, but just a few. With Vietnamese people, up to now we have about 76 million. And we have a total about 80 different religions. But three big groups, Buddhist, it's about more or less 30%. And Roman Catholic, about more or less 9%. And Protestant, about 6 or 7% compared with population. And the rest of them, if I do about seven some releases, I can remember all. Nai Hoa Hao, Cao Dai, Balamon, whatever. There's some group they believe from river, from the big bottom of the tree, or whatever. As I come here right now, I don't think any organization know exactly and accurately how many people, Vietnamese people in this state. But depend on the Census Bureau and our own research information. So we estimate up to now, we have about 22 to 25,000 Vietnamese people living around this state. But most of them are about 20 to 22,000 living around Twin City. Twin City, I mean whole area. And those groups, as you know, this special point, the Vietnamese Roman Catholic, just about 9% population. But majority of them come South Vietnam from North Vietnam, 1954 Catholic. So they consider the serious crime with communists. So that when South Vietnam collapsed 1975, so majority of that group tried to escape out of Vietnam. So that the Catholic people in Twin City about 30% of the total. So about religious, the Catholic, we have one parish, Vietnamese parish, St. Joseph in 1800 Dupont, Minneapolis. And that parish, we have about more or less 3,500 members. And in St. Paul here, we have two, I call it a community or group, because they're not a parish yet, because we have to depend on the American church. One group in St. Columbus Church, that group about more or less 500 members. And have one Vietnamese priest to take care of them. And one second group, almost the same, about 500-600 people in St. Annabelle Church right here. And have one Vietnamese priest take care of too. And about Buddhist, we have one community in Roseville, and have a temple, very good temple over there. And one community in Minneapolis somewhere, but that's not really complete and yet. And we have two Protestant church, one in very close to St. Paul and one in Minneapolis. And about that about religion, and about grow up the Vietnamese Asia, old gentleman know. I call it three period of time. The first period of time, that means from May 75 up to 80. Then May 75, it means the time South Vietnam collapsed. So a lot of people follow the American army, flee out of Vietnam. And that group come here just about more or less 4,000 to 5,000 people spread out all over the state. Then the second period from 80 to 86, that time we call it boat people. That means a lot of people in South Vietnam, they try to escape. So that period of time come here maybe triple. That means from 80 to 86, the population come up about 16,000 some. Then the third period of time from 86 to up to now, they call their own official in detention, that means in a community jail, relief and deep country, half of them come here. So that it bring up the population right now. Of course, some one day family reunited or blood, mixed blood, whatever, but that not much. Then the growth of population also it grow from business and carrier. And up to now, we have a total about 150 store, shop, company. And including NIDIT, we have two medical doctor office, three psycho doctor, three dentists, four cardiologists, four insurance, one legal insurance. We have insurance legal too. Then also we have horoscope one. I don't think you believe horoscope, but Asian people still someone. And three money transfer, one Nail Academy School, nine real estate office, five travel office, one income tax, one lawyer, one printing, three photography, two TV, VCR repair, whatever, four translation and notary public, 44 restaurant, just around Twin City. You see how many all over. And some of them real good. They have a lot of American customers, tell you that. And 12 barber shop, beauty salon, six gift shop, three fashion shop, 10 car garage, 16 grocery store, seven jewelry, and one video, three high-tech electronics, and one of them hire about 200 workers. So the way I think, if 150 store and company, each one have about five worker work for them, and five worker, each one feed about two kids. So we can self-support at least about 30-35% population. And about newspaper and entertainment, we have one newspaper they publish every 2 weeks. We call Ngai Nai, that means Ngai Nai Today, Today Minnesota. And Boothfield, their headquarters not here, but they distribute here every week. And one Little Saigon, the headquarters in Westminster, California, but they distribute here also. They are public in Vietnamese language. And one Asian press, they are public every week in English. And a book, too many I can remember, at least over 100 different kind of book they public in Vietnamese language. Then about culture, we have too many things to tell, but I just tell you three things. Every year in here, mostly we organize in Twin City, either in Minneapolis or in St. Paul, majority in St. Paul. First of all, we call Vietnamese New Year, we call it Vietnamese Tết. It usually happen around between January and February. It changes every year about 4 or 5 days. And the second one, we call it Hung Vuong, great-great-grandfather. That means great-grand of the Vietnam country. We celebrate usually about around in April. We just did it last week. And the third one usually we celebrate is the South Vietnam collapse. It happened on April 30th. So, and about social service, we have some organization about social, now we call Vietnamese social service. We have the new Vietnamese new come here, and they have very difficult about language, so half of them whole kind of their need. And one organized we call a shirk in Minneapolis, and many small office. So that's something I can share with all of you, and I would like to save time for your question, please.
Appreciate that very much, Mr. Pham. I'm curious, your market or your capital market, it sounds like it's been pretty successful. Are most of your customers from around the Minneapolis area alone? Are they Vietnamese customers? Are they other Asians? Do they come from other areas of the Twin Cities to your market? You said there were 16 grocery stores, I think. Is you considered a grocery store, or?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm proud to say that our store, we call Joe Tudor Capital Market. We are not at the beginning. We opened it 89. And particular, we carry many, not complete, but many the Vietnamese traditional item and also Asia item. And also we organize it by ourselves, building, I take care of it. And at the first, we work it by whole family because of 10 children. At that time, they still go back and forth at University of Minnesota and they come home and help. So that we spend just less expensive so that we can compete with any store in Twin City. And also we proud to tell you that if you don't mind, have a chance, stop by Capital Market and learn about Vietnamese, we will give you this phone book. Okay. You will know a lot of detail in here. And also we proud to tell you the grocery store, mostly Asian, I don't feel shame myself to tell you about sanitary, not very good. But we proud to tell you Capital Market, the number one, the clean in Twin City. The in food inspector cannot correct us anything. Yes. And also I learned from when I was a physical plant director, so I must respond for the food. So I learned from that and applied to my store.
Thank you. Representative Navak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pham, your store, do you get customers from the Minneapolis as well as the St. Paul Vietnamese communities? And is there a lot of a similarity between those communities in general?
Mr. Pham?
Yes. I don't get it clear. The seminar, that means seminar item or product or what seminar?
Oh, Representative Nawa.
My first question would be, Mr. Chair, Mr. Pham, do you have many customers for your Capital Market who are also from Minneapolis?
Yes,
Mr.
We
Pham,
do.
Yeah.
Not only in Twin City, we have a customer from Rochester, from St. Cloud, from Wisconsin, from North South Dakota, all over. But far, they just come one per month or two times per month.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Pham, are there any differences in the sorts of products or preferences that Vietnamese from Minneapolis or St. Cloud or Rochester want in your store as compared to those in St. Paul?
Mr. Pham?
Yes. I can say that mostly the same product. Of course, I have some different. That's a secret. But yeah.
You don't have to reveal that.
But the more secret is very simple. If you want to attract more customer come, that means compete. So it's very simple. Good product, because most Asian food is a fresh food, like vegetable or shrimp or fish or something. Should be fresh, real fresh. The same product, if it's the vegetable, if not fresh, they don't want it. Even you sell it half price, they don't want it. Particular Vietnamese people. And some incense, it depends on the suit. Incense in summer, we get it right in here in Noco. But in winter time, we have to get it from Hawaii or from Florida. So it's real good. Then also, I just mentioned it should be clean and polite, and that means respect customer, and also lower price. not secret at all.
Representative Mr. Chair, Mr. Pham, other businesses that are owned by Vietnamese that you know in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, are their customers throughout the Twin Cities, or do people from Minneapolis tend to shop in Minneapolis and people in St. Paul tend to shop in St. Paul?
Mr. Pham?
Yes. This is a very good question. In Vietnamese culture, it should have a little bit about psychology. That means out of the good product, low price, good service, and need to be friendly. And my friend know me. And how the way we deal with the customer. But a majority people in Minneapolis, they shop in Nicollet area. But most of people in St. Paul, they shop in right here in university area. But my store still have some customer all around state and even other state to come here. Because I have some product they don't have. Yeah. And earlier, Ms. Irene Hull, she said about business, we have a special thing I did. Most of the Vietnamese, and I think American the same, like in super American, they carry almost everything. So if you come there, you just go one plate. So that's the reason why we just have a two area. That's the main reason.
Oh.
So that they come here, even my store, not large as in Twin City, but we carry a lot of items, but still not complete. So that if they come here, they shop in this shop, don't have that, they go around this area and they buy it. And Vietnamese cook, I believe you already eat it. It does a little bit secret in something else put in a restaurant. Many people open restaurant, but not all of them succeed. But few of them very succeed because of the way they prepare the food.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Pham, the reason that people from Minneapolis maybe tend to shop in Minneapolis or people in St. Paul tend to shop in St. Paul is just because it's closer. It's not usually because there is a great difference between the things that Vietnamese in Minneapolis like as compared to Vietnamese in St. Paul. Would that be true?
Mr. Pham?
Yes, I think maybe both. The closers are one of the reason, particular in winter time. And majority people, they working, so they cannot drive too far and bad road. But the other reason true also. So that the other reason is if the shop owner how to deal with customer, they will keep them. And the Vietnamese traditional usually if they trust one shop, they go there all the time. Except something that shop don't have, but they go another place. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I must say I find Representative Knobloch's interest in minority shopping patterns quite intriguing for a political committee. But Mr. Pham, this committee is a redistricting committee. This committee's job will be to draw the lines across the state that will determine where people will go to vote and who they vote for, who's going to represent them. So my question, because I know, and I have to apologize to you, I know very little about Vietnamese community, but my question to you is, can you tell us to what degree are Vietnamese Americans involved in politics in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Are people from your community involved with, say, the Republican Party or the Democratic mm-hmm. Party or the Reform Party? Do people vote? Are they registered to vote? Maybe if you can just tell us a little bit, whatever you know about that, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Pham?
I would like to make it clear that your questions and how many people, how many percent people interest in Democrat, whatever.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That question it very good question, but it's a little bit difficult for me.
Sure.
Because if you ask me how many percent people want to get involved in political area, I can tell right away. Majority Vietnamese people, they really concerned about political because they are victim of communists. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell 100%, but at least 95% the Vietnamese people, mm-hmm. because they are refugee, they are victim of communists. So they really concerned in myself. So no matter what party, what candidate, if they consider that candidate, if on the federal level, and have a strong hand with the communists, they will vote for him or for her. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what party. Mm-hmm. And in state level and city level, and they're very realistic. Who work for them, that means help them something, they will vote for that gentleman or lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that means back and forth. You help me, I help you. Right. Doesn't care so much about party. But in federal, yes, they really care about politics, mm-hmm. and ethnic. Because majority of Vietnamese people, they come here because political reasons. Yes.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Pham, do you know how many people in the Vietnamese community in Minnesota are voting? How many people vote from the Vietnamese community? Is it a lot of people? Or is it small numbers of people?
Mr. Pham?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that question, our question also. Because that question I cannot answer exactly. Because you realize that when we come here, we must wait 5 years
sure.
to get the citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us, because their background have a very low education, and it's very hard for them to get citizenship. Someone fell 3-4 times test. And some of them have to wait after 15 years to get citizenship test by own language.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the way we estimate up to now, at least about half, more than half of us have a citizenship. And most of them, when they have a citizenship, they're very happy go out to vote. And vote for whom I just tell you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Pham, just to follow up, I mean, would members of the Vietnamese community, I had the privilege of my college roommate from being from Vietnam, and he went through the citizenship process, and I know that was a very, he was very excited. I mean, when he went through that process and was able to participate and vote and become politically active, I mean, do you think there are members of the Vietnamese community, as we heard earlier from Ms. Her, that are interested in, I mean, if possible, to put legislative districts where the Vietnamese community can be influential in electing Vietnamese members to the legislature, to office? Is that something that the community would be interested in?
Did you have the label?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Particular, we call it the young generation. Because in Vietnamese community, we have the community, they organize, including about 34 young men and women. And they are all graduate from university in this country. So now they are preparing to get involved. Because we get involved almost any area, technical, social, and every area, except political area. And the older generation like me or someone older than me, they really want, but they have the trouble because of language. Not many of us speak English very well. So that old generation, I don't think much of them. But the young generation, I say yes, very near future, they are preparing to get in.
Sure. Okay. Representative Riffman, you had a question.
Pass, Mr. Chairman. My question's been answered.
Okay. Well, Mr. Pham, thank you very much. I should just ask you, I mean, do you think it would be helpful, you commented on the political aspects, I mean, do you think that the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, I mean, you talked about the different business communities in those districts, should they be combined into one federal congressional district? And you talked about legislative districts, but is that something that we should consider?
Yes, I don't see yet. I think I don't know much about government organization, but I think if the federal district, it depends on population. They have 1 million for one seat of our representative. So if that way, I think St. Paul alone and some city around here, it almost have a 500,000 for one seat already. So I don't think we put two together. Mm-hmm. Not necessary, because over there, they are about almost 400,000. They have their own district already. And in St. Paul and some around here, we have enough population. And I believe if a shall search 2000, at least this state have at least about 5 million population. So we need maybe two more Congress seats. So I don't think the idea put two cities together in one district is a good idea.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, next, I think we have Mi Vang. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the tape and appreciate your patience.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm honored to be here, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for having me. Again, my name is Mi Vang, and I'm the executive director for the Hmong United International Council of Minnesota, a shorter term in which we're more well-known in the community is of the representation of the Hmong 18 clans within the council, and so it's better known as the 18 Council. Just a little bit about, a little summary about our background is that the council was created in 1996 following some tragedies within the Hmong community relating to the death of the six children, for the Hmong to respond to issues such as this, because as the community is growing in Minnesota, so are the crime rates, whether it's youth or between family conflicts and clan conflicts. And a lot of the reasons is because the Hmong are not trusting the state government, and the council's production was to build that bridge with Hmong families to rebuild that trust and strengthen the bridge between Hmong families and other local agencies. In Minnesota alone, in the Hmong community, I want to say as a message from the board of directors at Hmong United is that the Asian population is very strong within Ramsey and Hennepin. When we go shopping, when we go out to play, it's very diverse. When I go shopping for grocery shoppings, I shop at all the stores. My favorite one is the Dragon Star right on Minnehaha and Dale. It has, like what Mr. Fawn had said earlier, low prices and fresh. And I see that a lot in families where we're looking for bargains. The other thing that I want to mention was that as the council, what we provide is that we also provide mediation so that we could become better neighbors in our cities. Hmong families, strengthen the Hmong families. We want to promote Hmong culture and family values. How can parents become better parents? How can they educate their children to believe in the education system and go to school? We have people that come to us, not just Hmong, we have people from other local agencies, other Asian agencies, people from businesses, state levels that call our offices for references and referrals. We have Hmong that come to our office from Rochester through all the way up to Taylor Falls. And we even have Hmong that seek help within the council or for referrals from California and Wisconsin. Right now, the highest concentrations of Asian population and for mainly Hmong is right in the Frogtown area, Eastside St. Paul, the housing projects, West St. Paul, and it goes all the way up through Little Canada. And I'm going to be very brief. I wasn't too sure what to expect because I just received a phone call and said, I'm supposed to attend a testify hearing. And I thought, wow, am I in trouble? And I just came. And so, I'm glad that this is very helpful. And my message to you is that it is very important for the committee members to draw a legislative district line around the areas of high concentration of minority so that we can have a voice in the public policy arena, because we do have families, we do have businesses, and we are working together, but we need to voice our issues, and people that are affected are not being heard. And so that's our message to you from the Hmong United International Council, and if you have any questions for me as well, please do ask them.
Representative Riffenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell us some of the things about the Hmong culture as far as annual celebrations, where they're held, what they involve, and maybe something about religious practices and culture, and if you have newspapers that are geared towards the Hmong community or such?
Yeah, Ms. Fang?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. The Hmong community on culture, religion, and as in ceremonies that we practice, there's been traditions that we picked up as immigrants to the U.S. where there's Christmas, and there's also Hmong that have been Christianized in Laos who practice Christmas even in Laos, but mainly, the bigger percentage of Hmong are still shamanists, and the main religion that we or the main ceremony that we usually participate in is the Hmong New Year's, and that's just I know that that's the only one that Hmong families really practice is New Year's.
And I'm sorry, when was the New Year's?
It's usually in November in Minnesota. It's in November because of the space availability at the River Center. And but it's
so that's New one Year's. Event that's held yeah. in St. Paul. I've seen that on TV, and you know, it's covered quite widely in the news. And is there a population from all over attend that?
Yeah. And we also in Minnesota, it's one of the It's a really progressing place. If you've gone to California to see the Hmong communities, Minnesota's number one for growing incomes and families. And one thing that we've seen, which is really productive, is the July 4th, allowing other ethnicities. And in the last couple of years, the soccer tournament has allowed other ethnicities have gotten involved and started their own booths at the soccer tournament to reach out to the Hmong community for information and what their communities as well. So we're building a network here through these celebrations, the soccer tournament and the Hmong New Year's. And so.
Any follow-up, Representative Riffberg? Does that answer your question?
No, that's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that and
yes.
your testimony, your expertise.
I enjoy being here, so thank you.
Thank you for coming. Next, I think we have Ying Vang of the Lao Family Center. Is that?
Mr. Chair, if it's admissible, I would like to talk on behalf of both our organizations. We work together.
Okay, please. Identify yourself for the tape and welcome to the committee.
My name is Chai Vang, and I'm with the Hmong American Mutual Assistance. It's a nonprofit organization based in Minneapolis. And before I go on, I want to thank the chairman and the committee giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of Hmong in Minnesota here. I'd like to give you some numbers to plug into the redistricting of the future here. Eileen's already given an overview of what percentage, and it was really good. But to my extent, I've been with the Hmong community since about 15 years with the Hmong community, working side by side with legal issues, and especially with the passage with the SR 240 with the Lao veterans of America to get their citizenships. We, from the beginning, we knew that there was a struggle within the community, that there was not enough educated individuals to build a data base to get Boulder Coalition started. I started one in California with Congressman Rodanovich, and we went out to the community and touched base with them. The mentality of the Hmong in particular is that they're a tight-knit family organized community. They follow their leadership. It was from Laos, and to here is the same thing. It's a same mirror of, per se, Fresno, California used to have the largest population within the United States, but it flip-flopped in the past 5 years due to economic stringencies. No jobs in Fresno, it was agriculture. Up here, you can, you know, don't put in your application or you'll get hired that day, you know, and it's that. But, and again, just on the humorous side, I'd rather talk about food. I like food. I've hit all the restaurants here in Minneapolis. One thing with the numbers is that within the Twin Cities, we are heavily concentrated in both Twin Cities. There is a percentage of, I would say, 60% within St. Paul here, and then 40% in Minneapolis or Hennepin County. Our agency, we do a lot of employment placements, and we can see the trend due to economics. It's such a mobile community, and once you lose the job, you just go to the other, go to your relative, and he'll place you with them in the company. So then again, it's just keep address are just changing because we can't keep up with our data in our organization. We see that overall in Minnesota, we have about 110,000 in Minnesota, the state of Minnesota. This number originated from, according to the State Department of Human Services, there are 70 or 80,000 Hmong within their database. But then again, the other 30 or 40,000 Hmong, since the five-year period, have they came up here and they're not on AMFIP. They're self-sufficient. They're in business, or rather they're just working and not getting assistance, so that we're really proud of that. But the 65% are still in that type of services that are needed. we see that right now there's the heavy concentrated area is Frogtown, say it's St. Paul East Side. Hundreds of families are like in Maplewood, Woodbury, a couple hundred families in West St. Paul. The other heavily concentrated area is North Minneapolis, zip code area 55405, 55411, 412, and 430. That's really tight. Our organization also deals with the housing mobility issue, where they have already taken from Glenwood, north of Glenwood, they demolished the housing there. So property at this point is really limited. So there are families that are going to Philly and suburbs to Brooklyn Park. But again, it's due to economics. The number is, there's always gonna be an undercount, and you're not gonna get an exact count. That's just due to the census, it's the same thing, I believe. But other 70,000 particularly, I see in both Twin Cities here, about 80,000, I would say. That if you redistrict as your question before, I think it would be very vital and beneficial, to, particularly to the Hmong community, since we're both concentrated in both areas. Even if you split the district between Hennepin County and here for congressional seats, we definitely would go forward with that. Our organization can see that right now citizenships are being placed due to the passage of the bill of SR 240. Older generations, formerly Army officers, are getting their citizenships. Our organization have outreach, trying to get them to encourage them to come in and learn the process of the political arena, how to get your voices out and to deal with issues within the broad aspect of the whole picture, not only seeing in the corner. We want to see the whole picture on how to really survive in this country. And as Eileen has indicated, you know, there's always conflicts between the younger generations and the elders, but I can say that the majority is still with particularly the elders, because they are the ones that supports the community in whole. When there's problems, then everyone runs to them. And that's why they started the council, the 18 council of Hmong there with 18 clans. And if redistricting, I think in part of in coalition with either Republican or Democrat, it's like Mr. Hung said, I think it's due to the leadership within a certain clan. If he or she has the trust of that particular clan, and if a certain Democratic or Republican person is running it, depending on who does the outreach, because there's always words that, you know, we'll do this for you, and then at the end it's flip-flop. But I believe it's kind of divided in a way, and there are about 30-40% who don't really care, because they're just trying to survive. I mean, it's hard enough to keep up with their children. There's a lot of truancy, gang activities, runaways, girls that are 15, 14, going out of state, and even the school system can't keep up with them. So we're dealing with big frustration of mobility within our community. So if you want to get an accurate database, I think the best chances are working with the agencies.
So Mr. Vang, the community, just to follow up, does not vote in a block, you're saying, for one candidate?
I think it can.
Can? Okay.
Yeah, it can vote in a block, and but then again, you have to get the right components or a person to do that, because there's intimidation. You'll have like per se 100 voters here, but they're not in the political arena, so they don't know where to go to vote, or even maybe they can't even drive there because they don't have a car. Transportation issues. There's a lot of issues, and then they already have a found problem, so they're not even going to deal with. I don't care who I vote for. You know, I'm dealing with my own personal problems here. Yeah, but. I would say that, but we're coming out of that because it's just a stepping stone. Everyone is understanding that because of the fact that we're not in that process, maybe there's problems there, where our voices are not heard. You know, there's things that can be done, that empowerment to your own self or to your community if you learn the process. You know, how we can probably change policies to meet the needs of our culture, particularly with the gang activities and the truancy, school issues like that. But when they get caught into the juvenile system, you know, they're either serviced like 2 or 3, maybe 2 days of STS work, going out and picking up garbage, and they're back on the street doing the same thing. And then Hmong, especially the elders, would come and say, hey, what's wrong? You know, why aren't they in prison or in a detention center? Because it's limited. I mean, you can't do that much in perspective to you know, that person, because he or she's still a child. So who's dealing with that? The parents have to deal with that, because of the legal age, it has to be 18 before anything can really be resolved for he or she to be an adult. So then again, that's another issue, but as far as like the numbers are redistricted, we hope that, and perhaps if you do redistrict, the population already has increased, and it would be really beneficial to the Hmong community. I think they will, in the future, I think they will vote in blocks if they learn how to, because it's a process that they need to understand. And they're right now, we're encouraging everyone to just to look at the perspective of being in citizenship, what's the benefits and what you need to do as a citizenship to really help your community. Is there any questions that I could answer?
And so do you think, that this committee should look at drawing legislative lines then to allow that block to go forward, I guess, for the community in terms of having the ability to elect someone
for the community itself? I'm not sure in detail how you redistrict your redistricting goes, but as per se, we have large community, both communities. So either way you do that, if it's angled properly, I guess we'll have a stronger hold on it.
Any questions at all? Thank you.
I'm sorry for being so bored.
No.
I'll talk about food next time. I have a great food system here. I was actually, before I came here, I only had 2 hours notice, so I'm sorry for it.
No, I appreciate very much you coming on short notice.
And again, next time, I'll prepare myself.
Do you participate in the cultural celebration as well?
Yes, I do.
Every year? Okay.
Yes, I do. I think that's one of the most presentable things that within the community. Although, everyone works for the whole year and then goes to the July 4th at Como Park and then the River Center. And it brings, the River Center brings national attention. I mean, everyone comes there because there's, I guess it's a longer vacation time during Thanksgiving. And then July 4th is, the tournament itself draws a lot of sports individuals, younger youth and family too. Yeah, July 4th is another vacation, so that's a good example to get away from the house or something.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I don't believe there's anyone else to testify.
Actually, I'm Jim Van from Law Family.
Okay. Would you like to testify?
I want to pass, Mr. Chairman, because when I see the 3 members from the Hmong community, so in order to vote in the committee, I want to pass and have me and Chai, do testimony.
Okay. Well, appreciate that. Yeah, thank you for coming. Well, I think that's it, members, so thank you. We will meet tomorrow at 12:30 to hear from the African-American community.